Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to the Peristyle Podcast on a Tuesday. Today, it's going to be a solo podcast with yours truly, Ryan Abraham, publisher of USCFootball.com. Want to get to, still had a whole bunch of questions we haven't got to yet, so I wanted to try to do my best to address all of those. If you have any questions or comments for us, you can email us, podcast@USCFootball.com, or give us a call at 424-254-9141. All right, so get a little background on what's been going on around USC Trojan football. Of course, there's kind of the coaching carousel going on, maybe as crazy as we have seen. A lot of names getting fired, people being rumored, for different jobs and all that kind of stuff. We already talked about Chip Kelly getting hired across town at UCLA. As I'm recording this on Tuesday around lunchtime Pacific, no hire has been made in Tempe at Arizona State. So we'll see kind of what happens with that. We don't know what's going to happen at Oregon State. USC plays Oregon State again next year, so they'll have a new coach. So with Gary Anderson being fired and pretty much the rest of that staff, I think Corey Hall is still there trying to hold things together. He was the interim coach that did pretty well the first couple games at Oregon State, but they weren't able to win, and then they just kind of fell off. And, of course, getting shellacked in the Civil War up there in Eugene. So they're going to do something new up there at Oregon State. We're not sure what Arizona State's going to do. Of course, we know what's going to happen at UCLA. Will any other changes be made? We'll have to wait and see. Doesn't seem like it in the Pac-12, but who knows? There's people that could be leaving for other jobs. One thing that's in play you should be aware of, USC doesn't play Oregon next year, but Oregon has come on strong. They look like one of the better teams in the conference when Justin Herbert was the quarterback, and there's rumors that Jimbo Fisher could go to Texas A&M. Where Kevin Sublin was fired. There's rumors that Kevin Sublin could come to Arizona State. That was kind of happening right away, but they've kind of backed off on that. Still could happen. So I think that would be a really big influx of great coaches to the Pac-12 South if Chip Kelly and Kevin Sublin end up coming. We'll see what happens there. But the big note here is 1 year up in Eugene, Willie Taggart, South Florida guy, could end up going back to South Florida, going back to Florida at some point. If Jimbo Fisher leaves and goes to A&M, a lot of people think Willie Taggart would leave Oregon, and they would have to do a whole nother coaching search up there. So you could have both Oregon schools looking for a head coach again. So we'll see. So there's the coaching carousel, certainly not done. I know a lot of people have asked me questions about USC. So T. Martin's name was rumored. He addressed USC's offensive coordinator, T. Martin, who won a national championship as a quarterback at Tennessee. So his name has been kind of talked about there, but this is only 2 years of offensive being a coordinator experience. Rumors are that we had heard that he had not been contacted by Tennessee. He could still go back there in some capacity, but it doesn't look like they've interviewed him or talked to him at all about the head coaching vacancy. Certainly, I think T. Martin's going to be a great head coach someday, but, obviously just 2 years of offensive coordinator experience, you could see so some of the jobs would kind of balk at that. But I think he's got what it takes to be a good head coach. So we'll see what ends up happening with him. I guess Tennessee's rumored to want to interview Mike Gundy. Now I saw someone tweet that Mike Gundy actually interviewed at Florida as well. So Dan Mullen, who they hired away from Mississippi State, might have been their fourth choice after Chip Kelly and Scott Frost. So there's a lot of weird stuff kind of going on with the coaching carousel. And USC, there's something to be said for stability, and there's some stability there. A lot of talk about, will USC make some changes? And we'll kind of get into all of that. So what I wanted to do for the show today, we had Harvey Hyde on already. We had Dan Weber on already. And we did a premium recruiting podcast with Gerard Martinez. So a lot of podcasts already this week. But okay, so I'm sort of, my brain, I got like an obsessive compulsive component to myself. I'm an engineer by trade. Like to be organized, like everything to be kind of in its place. And our entered, Connor Shute does a great job getting all these questions in. You send them in to podcast@uscfootball.com. He organizes them and puts them all together. Well, I get this Google, you know, this is like how the sausage is made, Google Doc about where all these questions are. And it just kind of like, there's like a little needle in my brain when I know I have a lot of questions sitting there. And we do have a lot of questions sitting there. So I wanted to try to, you know, run through some of them. I don't want you to guys, you know, send in a question and not get it answered. There's only, you know, so I want to try to get to some of these, and we thought we'd do a solo podcast. I don't know if we're going to do a preview podcast. USC's already played Stanford. But, you know, we'll talk about that, too. We've all the other podcasts, we've kind of talked about this game, and I'll do the same here. But we want to answer some of these questions for you. A lot of people have sent in different topics, you know, wide ranging. And we're going to, any ones we don't get to, like I said before, we will save for after the Pac-12 championship game. So kind of during bowl practice time, I'm sure you guys will send in more questions about who USC is playing in the bowl game and all that kind of stuff. But we will address some of these other ones. There's a bit more evergreen type of questions, like just general USC football questions. And we'll do our best to kind of get to all of those. But, you know, thanks again for sending those in. Before we jump into all that, I wanted to talk to you about my brand new bed. It's a Lisa bed, and it's really cool. So if you heard me talk about it before, it comes right to your door in a box. It looks like a box that you would get, I don't know, like a trash can in or something. And it's a bed, which is crazy. It's an innovative direct-to-consumer online mattress brand that's also very socially conscious. So it's cool on that aspect. They're driven by a mission to provide a better place to sleep for everybody. And they donate one mattress to a shelter for every 10 that they sell through their 1 in 10 program. So right now, over 22,000 mattresses have been donated so far. They also plant a tree for every mattress they're sold. So obviously very eco-conscious company. And 1% of each employee's time is used to, they donate to volunteer for local causes. So they actually have, you know, not here in Southern California, but in Soho, New York City, and Virginia Beach, they actually have dream galleries there. And I think they're going to expand to do more of them. But most everything is available. Most of what they do is done online. And it's an American made mattress, and it's compressed, and it'll ship right to your door, like I talked about. So you can try the mattress in your home for 100 nights risk-free, and it's free shipping as always. And so right now you can buy it over 80 West Elm stores nationwide if you want to do that. But like I said, online is the way to go. So they're available in U.S., Canada, U.K., and Germany. And they're going to continue to expand their operations. There's a Lisa pillow, a blanket foundation, and a frame. All of that is available online with free shipping. So what you want to do is you're going to get 100. If you want to try it out, like I said, you get 100 days free to try it out. Free shipping. $100 off the Lisa mattress using the code below. So you want to go to leesa.com/USC. So leesa.com/USC, and you're going to get $100 off. And like I said, you can try it for 100 nights risk-free, and it's always going to be free shipping. So I love sleeping in it. If you need a new mattress, definitely go check it out, leesa.com/USC. Okay. Let's jump into some of these questions. I'm just going to read through them and do my best to answer those. Lots changing, like we said, in the college football landscape. But the focus right now for USC is taking on Stanford in the Pac-12 championship game. That's Friday night in Santa Clara, Levi Stadium, 5 p.m. Kickoff. Our whole uscfootball.com team will be up there giving you all kinds of information, inside stuff of what's going on with the USC team. Lots of interviews, pictures, videos, all that kind of stuff. We'll have it covered better than anybody. Guarantee you that. No one will have more people up there. No one will have better coverage up there than our team at uscfootball.com. All right. First up, we got Robin in Virginia. Hey, Ryan, could you please address why USC is still number 11 in the AP poll for the last 4 weeks and why Clemson only dropped 5 spots after losing to unranked and non-bowl eligible Pittsburgh by double digits, while USC lost to number 16 Washington State and fell 9 spots. Robin in Virginia. Hey, Robin. We get this a lot on Twitter, people talking about what's going on with the polls, and I don't put a whole lot of stock into the polls, especially the, you know, I think the AP poll I like a little bit better. The coaches poll, not at all. Don't worry about that at all. That's basically an SID poll. Do you think all the coaches have time to watch all the games? No, it's just it's basically just status quo, putting together who do you think is supposed to be good. They're good. Are they lost? Drop them a little bit. Mainly with USC is you want to compare losses, compare wins, all that kind of stuff. I think what were you talking about? So it was Miami. Yeah. So Clemson. So Clemson didn't drop a lot when they lost. I think the main thing is Clemson has better wins than you. Auburn looks like a world beater right now, and Clemson beat them. USC has three wins over teams with a winning record. So I think that's part of the problem. And really the best teams USC played, they lost to. Now, Stanford is the best win. And you got to, but unfortunately, you got to play them again. You're not going to get a whole lot of credit for beating them again, but you will be dinged a bunch if you lose. So it's kind of not a great situation, I would say. But a lot of it, too, is just how you look. So if you tune in and you see, man, Ohio State got smoked by Iowa, like, wow, that sucks. But all these other teams, you know, when they beat Penn State or they beat Michigan State or they play the crappy teams and they roll them, you know, and just destroy them. That's kind of what, if you feel like a team is really good, you know, in kind of the pollster's minds, you look at that, you're like, okay, they beat a team that they should beat. Oh, wow, they came out flat and lost a game. But that was one game or, you know, maybe two games or whatever. And USC looked awful. And they're lost to Notre Dame. And Notre Dame's been on a downward trajectory pretty much since then. So that doesn't help. But I think the chances when USC won games, the chances to look really good and kind of spread their wings, they didn't do that. So not blowing out teams that you probably should have blown out contributes to that. So it's not just about A, B, C. This is what it is. Like people watch games and they look at USC and they're 10-2. But they haven't been all that impressive. The best game USC played all year was Stanford. So I think that's what has to, a lot of the polls. But I wouldn't put too much stock in the polls. The only one that really matters, if you want to talk about, winning the national championship, is the college football playoff. That's going to come out later today, like pretty much soon after I release this podcast. USC probably moves up to 10, right? Is that, I think USC was 11 at 10, but that doesn't really matter. USC's not making the playoff this year. Well, don't worry about the polls. If USC wins the Pac-12 championship game and then they win like the Fiesta Bowl or something, they'll be like a number 5 or 6 team. Like that's about where they should be then, Don't worry about what they are right now, Robin. I wouldn't worry too much. We had another one from Robin. Hope your family and staff had a lovely Thanksgiving. I'd like to know if Helton's decision to take the week off was a good idea, considering we now know they'll be playing Stanford, who has a new quarterback. Santa Clara is not far from Palo Alto, so it's essentially like a home game for Stanford. They're coming off a huge win against Notre Dame, and USC lost to Notre Dame by 35 points. Not something who USC was preparing for. Was taking the week off a wise decision, and could they have done something? I get that having a few days off after they've grinded out 12 straight weeks is necessary, especially since it's a holiday weekend, but they could have done something, Tuesday, Wednesday, or Saturday. You said previously under Sark they had like 6 practices in a whole month and lost to Wisconsin in the Holiday Bowl. That's actually Clay Helton when that happened, not Sark. So when Sark was gone, that was Clay Helton. I hope the decision doesn't prove to be fatal Friday. He said, I'd like to amend my previous statement that Sark was the head coach when USC lost to Wisconsin. It was indeed Clay Helton. Oh, yeah. Okay, so she corrected that. Thanks again, Robin. Okay, so the whole Holiday Bowl thing, I understand some of the rationale because he basically had to fire half his staff and you're replacing here's a strength coach coming to coach defensive lines. Here's a grad assistant. Now, there was a lot of guys, support staff people taking over position coaches and there was a lot of that. So how much preparation could you have really done? Did he need to prepare the coaches to actually practice and prepare the players? I think some of that is true, but I think they certainly should have practiced more than they did. I think he leans on the lighter side of practicing, and a lot of people don't agree with that. And obviously when you come out and play crappy against Wisconsin, then you can second guess all you want because you're like, hey, you should have practiced more. You would have played better. It's not necessarily that would have happened for sure, but that's certainly what a lot of people said. And I agree with it. I thought they should have practiced more. And we got to cut the running around. We were asking about how many practices, and it wasn't, we counted them, and it wasn't as many as they were saying. So they knew that that was going to look bad. So they were kind of fluffing up the numbers a little bit. As far as this week, I'm not going to fault Clay Helton. The guys we talked to yesterday at practice, so they practiced full practice on Monday, so a day earlier because they're playing on Friday. The guys were really happy to take the week off. Like Ronald Jones went home. Now, not saying you should do whatever the players like, but I think the uniqueness of a situation where you didn't practice for 12, I mean, we didn't get a break, not for just 12 straight weeks, but fall camp and all that, never having more than like 2 days off in a row, I get it. They needed some time off. So I'm kind of cool with it. Now, I would have liked to see Monday a full pads practice, which they didn't do. It was just a regular, you know, shoulder pads, shells practice sort of thing. You know, I've talked to some of the players before, and if you're a college football player and you go into the locker room, and, you know, it's different on which day. So if it's a day where there's no shoulder pads at all, you just put your jersey and helmet on, you know, that's a certain mentality you have. You're putting shoulder pads on that kind of, you know, perks you up a little bit. It's a little more physical than what you would, you know, would be a day with no pads. But if you got to put full pads on, that's changed your mentality altogether. And I'm not saying they needed to, you know, tackle the whole practice, but just going into the locker room and knowing, oh, we haven't had full pads on since the middle of October outside of games. Like, we got to put full pads on today. Like, this is serious. Like, I think you can kind of change the mentality a little bit. That's just my opinion. So I would have liked to have seen that and maybe do some goal line stuff. You don't have to hit the whole practice, like I said, but it would have been nice to see that. I think it would have been a nice change. It wasn't. You know, Clay Helton's got his system, and they're doing it by that, you know, doing it that way. So we'll see. But thanks, Robin, for those questions. Don, what do you think the future holds for Clay Helton? Being completely objective, Helton has mediocre coaching abilities. Man, that's rough, Don. They've won 10 games twice, two years in a row. Unfortunately for USC, Stanford has improved since earlier part of the year and will embarrass USC in the title game. I know that their quarterback is not that good, but Helton will be exposed by Shaw in a big game. UCLA with Chip, I believe he put added pressure on Swan if Helton fails to win this game. May not seem fair with 10 wins, but life is not always fair. Then again, Helton did not get this job because he was a good coach, merely because he was at the right place at the right time. Don, wow, that's pretty rough. Okay, I think this game Friday is immensely important because there's a lot of the fan base like yourself, Don, who's not real happy with the way USC's been playing. I actually talked to some of the players about that yesterday. You know, the team is 10-2. And a lot of the fans don't like the way they got there and felt they could have won the Washington State game and looked better against Notre Dame. And I agree with all those. Like, I certainly agree with that. They haven't looked that good. So to me, if you win the game on Friday and you win the Pac-12, the naysayers should be like, you know what? Yeah, they haven't looked great. They've kind of eked by wins. Maybe they shouldn't have eked by. But Stanford, to me, was the biggest game of the year. They won that already. Now, you know, winning the conference, that's what Lynn Swann wants to see. So a lot's based on, to me, Don, a lot is based on this game. And Lynn Swann probably be a lot happier if they win this game than not. And the pressure on Clay Helton is going to be ratcheted up anyway, even if he wins this game. That's after winning the Rose Bowl, and let's say he wins the Pac-12 championship. The pressure's going to be up just because Chip Kelly's across town, just because ASU's probably going to bring in somebody good and will be a great recruiter and try to take guys away from Southern California. I think the pressure in the Pac-12 South is going to be ratcheted up. USC won it going away this year. The second-place team fired their coach. The second place, the team that was favored to finish second, fired their coach. It's going to be a lot. You know, you can't win, you know, squeak by some games that you probably shouldn't do. I think a lot of this is going to be really important for Clay Helton. So, Don, I wouldn't be as pessimistic as you are, but we will see. Okay, we got Maybet in Ontario. Hey, Ryan. In the light of the Chip Kelly hiring, who foots the bill when public schools hire highly paid coaches? How much does the school, meaning the taxpayers, because it's public school, pay? What is the maximum percentage of boosters can kick in? Thanks for your dedication to Georgia football, Maybet in Ontario. I don't know. I think a lot of this was done with like Casey Wasserman type of money. He's the IMG guy. big UCLA booster. I don't think the state's, you know, flipping the bill for a lot of this. You know, there's a budgets for the athletic department and all that, and you know, I feel that a lot of this is coming from boosters, but I don't know all that. That's not really my expertise, so sorry about that. I don't know more about that. Tyler and Sammamish, Chip Kelly to UCLA is awesome news for USC, all in caps. Only increases pressure on USC to win, to recruit, to hire the very best coaches possible. Ups Pac-12 credential status profile. Pac-12 just busted the SEC for the highest profile coach available. Plus, LA puts LA College in the spotlight. All good. Competition, baby. Love it. Tyler and Sammamish. Hey, I agree with you, Tyler. I think the kind of term I've used is USC sort of was sleepwalking through a 10-2 season, which, you know, maybe is not fair, but didn't really have to do anything crazy, you know, and still won the Pac-12 South going away. Played really good a couple of weeks. And Clay Helton was asked about this yesterday. Did you play your best against Stanford? He kind of was like, well, one of our best, but I don't think it's a question. USC played their by far best game of the season against Stanford. Maybe second would be Arizona State. A lot of kind of clunkers where, you know, they were down big to teams and then and came back and won, or, you know, beating a really mediocre Texas team in overtime and falling down to Utah, you know, even like, you know. So a lot of games like that. The point being, I think they played their best against Stanford. You're going to have to play better in a higher percentage of your games, I think. Yes, you got the win. You did enough to win, and there's something to be said for that. But I think Chip Kelly will certainly put more pressure on USC, the coaches, administration. Make sure if you feel like a position group is not performing up to snuff and you have to get rid of that coach, you go out and get a really good one and you pay him a lot of money. And you get someone that's somewhere else that's a good program, that's doing a great job. Not a friend or, you know, a family member or something. You just go out and get a guy that's the best at what he does, like Dylan McCullough. Even from a bigger, like, I think Dylan McCullough is doing a great job, and he's at Indiana, and you're like, hey, go get the, you know, but if there's someone at Oklahoma or Florida State or Texas or whatever, like a big time, you know, a blue blood program, and you want to go get them, go get that guy too. Not just a bottom rung Power Five program. Go get someone from a major, you know, a upper tier Power Five program. And so, yes, Tyler, I think that's great for competition. I think it's important. And I think it can help USC if USC responds the right way. Let's see. Harry says, I'm not melting down about the Chip Kelly hire for a few reasons summarized below. Interested in your opinion. One, Chip's quote-unquote new offense is no longer new. Half the teams run some sort of variation, many better than his. Been there, done that. Okay, a lot of people run it now. He was an innovator. Can he still be an innovator? I mean, that's part of the question. I don't know if a lot of people run it better than the way he ran it. You can't compare it to what he's doing in the NFL. That's a different game. I think he's going to come back and have a very successful offense in college. That's my opinion. We'll see. Chip's an aggressive offensive coordinator as a coach. Doesn't solve UCLA's defensive issues or makes them a complete team. Oregon's defense sucked too. Yeah, we saw Oregon's defense get better when they brought in Jim Leavitt, so I think hiring a defensive coordinator is going to be very important. And Jim Mora was a defensive guy, and they were on pace until USC played him, actually, to be fair, to have the worst run defense in college football over the last 15 years. They were going to average giving up 300 yards a game. Now, they played better the last two games, only give up 153 to USC, and then I think like 220 to Cal. So their average dropped below 300. But if USC would have run the ball like I thought they should have against UCLA, they would have kept that average up there, and it would have been the worst run defense in the last 15 years in college football. So, yeah, they had a defensive-minded head coach, and their defense was terrible. So it was hard for them to replace some of the guys that they sent to the NFL, too. Three says, granted, Chip's name and offense will attract recruits, but no flashy uniforms, no soft academic requirements at UCLA. Recruiting won't be as easy as everyone thinks. I think they will get flashy uniforms because of the Under Armour stuff. They put some weird stuff out there. I don't know how much that really matters, though, but I think they will get that. And, you know, recruiting is going to be easier at UCLA than Oregon because you're at UCLA. You're in Southern California. There's five stars. You could hit a pitching wedge and hit a five star out of Westwood. So I think recruiting gets easier. he's not known as being like some crazy great recruiter, so you got to get guys on staff. So his hires, I think, are going to be really important. Expectations are already through the roof. The sequel is never as good as the original. I think that's fair. It's hard to repeat greatness. Jaws 2 wasn't as good as Jaws. In the end, it's only one game a year, Harry. Good stuff, Harry. Yeah, and I would just think that, you know, you're going to battle on the recruiting front. One game a year is fine, but that's a game that kind of hangs over you for the whole year. So USC fans hate to lose to UCLA. Like beating them? Not as much. UCLA likes to beat USC more than USC likes to beat UCLA. USC loves to beat Notre Dame. That's what you love. You don't really hate, you know, it's not great to lose to them, but it's not like a death sentence. Like losing to UCLA is just the worst. So, because you hear about it all the time. So I kind of think that's the way it goes with USC and UCLA. It certainly steps up everybody's game. Should people be panicking? No, they shouldn't be panicking. But USC needs to step up their game, because I think playing like you did this year, after Chip, like if you play like this with 2 years from now, after a couple years with Chip Kelly, I don't think you're going to be 10-2 and win the South going away. So it was a really down Pac-12 South this year. Tarek says, could you see using a 4-3 against several players on, I'm sorry, going to a 4-3 since several players on defense would play better in that scheme? Tarek, no, I think Clancy's got a scheme, and he goes with it. And we've seen what he does. Whatever he's done against Stanford in the past, I think you're going to see that. So they'll bring in some extra defensive linemen sometimes for like their jumbo package, but I don't think Clancy's changing his scheme for anyone. He does what he does, and that's what he does. And if you're going to give up, you're going to lead the nation in sacks, but maybe you give up a whole bunch of big plays in the passing game. I don't think he's changing that at all. Let's see. SC Listen Seattle. He said, hey, Ryan, on the Facebook podcast, so he's talking about our Facebook live show, which, okay, by the way, because it's a shorter week, we are going to do our Facebook live show Wednesday at noon. So if you want to go watch us live, we'll have the whole crew Wednesday at noon Pacific. Go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/USCfootball.com, spelled out, DOTCOM. Go to that. We'll also put it up on USCfootball.com, but we'll do our live show Wednesday this week instead of Thursday. He said, you spoke about a few of the USC coaches and possible changes. One, the O-line coach. Coaches have to work with what they have on the roster. Callaway is building his guys up and recruiting his type of players. He needs to stay and continue the progress. It could take a few recruiting cycles for this to happen in general. Every coach hires guys they are familiar with. USC is no different. There's a reason you want guys you know are familiar with. Trust. Okay, so talk about the offensive line coach. I think if you want to talk about keeping Neil Callaway, who's, you know, doesn't really like to talk to people, which doesn't mean you're not a good coach. I think continuity is one of the main reasons, because USC had so many offensive line coaches over the last 5 years. Now having the same guy from last year to this year, does that help? You know, have they performed up to expectations? You know, we'll see. But that's what SC List in Seattle saying. And then he said, the DB coach hire has never been a popular one at USC. Some at SC are more concerned with big names. They think having a big name will lead to success. Not always the case. You mentioned Clay Helton hiring guys like T and the defensive line coach who don't have a lot of experience. Wisconsin did the same thing, and it's worked out great. It's worked out great for USC, too. I'm confused by some of the things you said. On one hand, you say it's important that USC has little coaching turnover. And then next, you say some of the coaches need to go. Which is it, Ryan? Okay, so I don't know if I've said you need no coaching turnover. I do feel that there are some position coaches that have underperformed and changes need to be made. And I think that's a tough decision that Clay Helton has to make. It's ultimately his call because he's the head coach and gets paid all that money. But I do agree that it's not just on the – just because other, you know, rookie head coaches have worked out doesn't mean that's what you should do. I think when you look at a Cal, you had a rookie head coach – and you had two head coaches as coordinators. I like that model a little bit better with more experience there. I'm not going to be calling for like, hey, fire this guy, fire that guy. But I think there's certain areas where USC's been deficient and certainly could play better. And you could bring in somebody with a much more proven track record. And I think you're going to need a lot of recruiting coaches too, because there's too many coaches on the staff that aren't really known as relentless great recruiters. And, you know, you want to look at the Pete Carroll days or other days, even Sark and Lane, people were recruiters. Like, it was a rarity if you had a guy on the staff that, you know, that guy's not a great recruiter. Most everybody was. And you can't say that about this staff. So I think you need to do that, especially if you're going to lose T. Martin, which it seems all, you know, seems very likely that T. Martin's not going to be around next year, getting a job somewhere else. He's your best recruiter. So you need to not only replace him, but really upgrade the other guys too. So it's going to be a major step back on the recruiting front. And you got to bring in more support staff guys. It's just, they're really thin. You know, Gavin Morris and Alex Rios and Eric Ziska. I mean, there's just not a lot of dudes there. I think they do a really good job for like the resources they have, but you need more. You got to bring in more. So all those things I think need to change. And he said, finally, Chip Kelly's a big name because you're enamored with big names. You're liking the hire. UCLA doesn't surprise me. LOL. Yes, I like big names. When's the last time USA hired a big name guy? Yeah, I'll wait for your answer off the air. No, I mean, you're going to say Pete Carroll. Pete Carroll wasn't really a big name guy. He was the biggest name that USC hired. USC's always tried to get people that no one else would want. Why should USC get people that no one else wants? Don't you think USC should have people that people want? You know, when's the last time USC had a coach leave? Pete Carroll. All the other ones have been fired. So I think it's better to go out and get a big name. I think, you know, those could fail too. But if you're going to fail with guys that aren't big names, I'd rather fail with a big name. So I'm sorry you feel that I'm slanted toward big name coaches, which I am at this point. And I think if USC went out and hired three big name coaches in a row, they didn't work out, and you want to say, hey, go find this diamond in the rough, fine. But all this is kind of moot at this point because, or moot at this point, sorry, mute. Moot at this point because USC's not getting a new head coach right now. That's what I'm mostly talking about. But if you want to talk about assistants too, yeah, I'd like to see USC go out and get some big names. He said, as always, I'm a huge fan of yours, although I can't say I would agree on much. But you being a USC supporter and fan, you have to respect that in the end. You have to respect that at the end of the day, SC less than Seattle. So I'm a journalist more than anything here, and that's what my job is to do, is to report on the team. And I'm going to tell you what I think. And what I think is USC needs more established persons in positions of power around the football program. I'll leave it at that. We got Don. Other than questionable coaching, I believe two things missing from this football team were fire and excitement, which were both lost with Adoree and Juju leaving. I believe SC needs Michael Pittman to bring that fire with his physical play on offense, and Porter Gustin to bring that fire on the defensive side. Porter Gustin was actually out for this game, FYI. He was not at practice yesterday. On offense, Tyler can bring the excitement, and he has shown with the great catches. On the defensive side, it will need to be Clancy's play calling. SC hasn't played as though they enjoyed competing on every down. Unfortunately, this year Porter was lost for most of the year, and coaches were sleeping on Tyler, just like last year with Sam. Bubba can bring some fire, but they never let him play. Levi could bring fire and excitement if he could ever get regular playing time. Don, I think some good points there. That who's the vocal leader on offense? Like, they really don't have one. And guys like Juju and guys like Adoree, not just their play on the field, but their leadership off of it, are severely missed. And you need someone to kind of step up that way. I think Sam Darnold is a great leader, but he leads in a much different way. He's a pull a guy aside, talk to him one-on-one. He's not a stand on the table and yell at everybody and gather everybody around. So I think they're missing some of that. They're missing, especially on the offensive side, vocal leaders. We got Marcel. He sent a text message. 2011, USC beats Chip Kelly in Oregon with less players. What does USC need to do to counter UCLA's new coach? Do we get a new offensive defensive coordinator, keep the status quo? Marcel in San Gabriel Valley. So 2011, so people are talking about Chip Kelly when he beat USC, it was sanction years, and it actually was not. So Chip Kelly was coaching there 2009, 10, 11, and 12. He beat USC 3 out of the 4 years. 2011, Lane Kiffin's year when he went 10-2 was the year that USC won up in Eugene. Big upset, great win. One of the best wins of Lane Kiffin's tenure at USC, if not the best. USC sections didn't really start then. They lost a couple guys to the quote-unquote free agency, and they weren't able to go to a bowl game that year. But sanctions didn't kick in as far as scholarship limitations until 2012. So really only Chip Kelly's last year did he play a sanctioned USC team. But as far as, like, what is USC new to counter, like I think we talked about already, it's just stepping up the level of the competition. It's not like anything you're going to do specifically, like, I got to go do this against Chip Kelly and blah, blah, blah. We've seen Clancy Pendergast have success against Chip Kelly when he was at Cal in the defensive coordinator. I think his schemes work better against spread teams. So I don't think you need to change there. Really just, you know, you got to play better each and every week. I think you got to coach better. You got to recruit better. You just got to do everything a little bit better. It was good enough this year to win the Pac-12, have the best record in the Pac-12, but it's just, it wasn't all that impressive on a week-to-week basis. But the overall picture, it was like, it was still really impressive. If you win, if you beat Stanford, man, that's great. I don't think it can be a status quo thing. I think there'll be some position coaches that need to be upgraded. But you got to, you know, everyone's got to put their big boy pants on and make sure you keep getting better. It's not just about, hey, we do what we do, and that's fine. It's about getting better. And they went to the Rose Bowl last year without winning the Pac-12. This year, they're going to try to win the Pac-12 and go to, like, the Fiesta Bowl. Next year, you want to try to make the playoff. So I think that's what you got to do. Terry in Bakersfield, I want to take my question away from the performance on the field and the coaching criticisms. It seems like I share a lot of the frustrations with other fans and oftentimes wonder what channels or voices can be best heard on the following topics. So number one, he said, schedule. Weeknight games are unacceptable. No other top programs concede to the scheduling that has been imposed on the Pac-12 over the past few years. Now, I agree there. I think it's all about the TV, but USC needs to push back and say, hey, you know, 2018, there's all this construction going on in the Coliseum. You know what we're not going to do? Play a Friday night game in the Coliseum. Like, not doing it. And we're not going on the road either. So you figure that out. But we're not doing it. So I think USC should use its leverage and push it around a little bit. What happened when the Big Ten said they were going to try to do some Friday night games for television? Michigan's like, no. Ohio State's like, no. I think USC needs to be like, no. Number two, independence. I know you've spoken about this in past podcasts, but what would it honestly take for USC to make a move in this direction for a football program? Some people hate the idea. I still love the idea of at least threatening to go independent. And maybe it's a go USC and UCLA break off and join like Notre Dame, and like their games are all broadcast on NBC every week or something. I don't know. I mean, think about it. Like, you don't have to. Do you have to be an equal share in the Pac-12 with Oregon State, who won one game this year? I mean, do you need that? Like, no. Like, you should be getting, like, Texas gets more because they're the biggest brand in the Big 12. USC should get more. You know, if UCLA wants it, they should get more. I think, you know, Washington, there's teams in the Pac-12 that should be not on an equal footing with the other teams. And why does Rutgers make $20 million a year more off television than USC? Why is that? I don't think that should be the case. So if the Pac-12 was just swimming in money and everyone was getting like these huge shares and you want to say, okay, everyone's getting equal, that's fine. But they're not making enough. So USC shouldn't be sharing the exact same amount if they're not getting enough with these other programs. So I'm a big proponent of that. I think looking at that, at least looking at what will it take, I don't think current administration will even think about that. Now, maybe I don't know enough about Lynn Swann, but there's too many people in that building that would never, ever consider that. So I think it would take, like, you hire, like, an athletic director who brings in his own people and looks at it like, this isn't right. I don't think anyone's in that building looking at that going, yeah, that's a realistic possibility. And three, number five, the jersey needs to be put back up under the peristyle, and Reggie Bush needs to lead the team out of the tunnel. It's time to give the NCAA the proverbial finger regarding this egregious injustice. Sorry for the long email, but I'd love to see a push by our fans to make some positive changes. I'm not sure what available channels would make this effective and appropriate. I agree 100% on the Reggie Bush stuff. His family took some money from a wannabe agent. Why does that make him persona non grata around the USC campus? Like, you got punished. Why does he have to never be around? Like, that makes no sense whatsoever. So, yeah, fight to get that back, Terry in Bakersfield. Fight to get that back. And what can USC fans do? Well, I was in a household over the weekend that was part of a movement. Not it was Vol Twitter. My wife is a Tennessee fan. Now, you can argue that it was stupid that they did this. Whatever. What, I'm not going to get into what Greg Schiano did or didn't do at Penn State and all that kind of stuff. But they got behind something, and Vol Twitter basically blocked the hiring of a head football coach who had signed an agreement. So there was so much outrage on social media that they blocked it from happening. Is that good or bad? Mob mentality? I mean, you want to argue? I'm not getting into all those kind of debates, okay? Since my wife was freaking part of this thing. But USC fans can band together on social media and on the go on the Peristyle, go on the USCfootball.com message boards, email your friends. Hey, man, we don't think this is right. What is it about? Like, what if they did that for the Coliseum remodel? That, hey, man, if this is great for the one percenters, this this ivory tower that the huge boosters are going to sit in, but for all of us that are going to get displaced and we're losing seats and parking spots and tailgating areas, and this all sucks for us. We don't want it. We want you to go back to the drawing board and do something. Now, we talked about it a lot, and Dan Weber the waving the flag for it and all of that. And I think there was some fan outrage and people might have, you know, wrote a letter or something, but there wasn't really the full on protesting on campus, Twitter barrages. Just, you could get USC's attention, and USC doesn't have like some huge social media department. There's a couple of people, you get their attention and they got to talk about it, you know? So, and I know those guys, I like all those people. I don't think they've been, you know, seen outrage on Twitter. So, if you want Reggie Bush back, start some kind of grassroots movement, and you know, and do something about it. Like that's the things you can kind of do. You want USC to go independent? Tell them you don't want USC making $20 million less than Rutgers or Iowa State or something. You don't want Oregon State making the same amount of money on television as USC when USC's ratings are like 10 times or whatever, you know, this major media market. Tell USC about it and, you know, make them do something about it. I'm not saying you should go start some mob, but getting a bunch of people together with a common goal and a common theme. And if that's the way the majority of USC fans feel, like the majority of USC fans, do they feel like Reggie Bush should be back on campus? Let them know. And maybe they can do something about it. I know they can do something about it. They just haven't. Make them, you know? And it's like, if it's kind of uncomfortable, that's how you get things done. So I would say you can do things like that. All right, next up we got Steve Benoff in Beaumont. Feeling better after a 9-3 season than a 10-2 season. Yeah, Steve, I think that's fair. 9-2, I think last year too, USC would have been 9-3 because, you know, starting off 1-3, you can't get any better than that. But making the Pac-12 championship last year probably wasn't going to be even the best thing. I think it worked out perfectly. Go to the Rose Bowl, kind of back into it, win a thriller against Penn State. This year was more about, hey, win the conference. And USC was pretty beat up last year. I don't know if they would have been able to repeat and beat Washington again, like they're going to be asked to do this year, beat Stanford twice. But yeah, no, I think, yeah, feel better. And I think feel really good if you end up 11-2. Drew Biz 71. Late in the year, last year and early this year, SC seems to go much more up-tempo, which seemed to give the offense a boost, especially in the red zone. It seems over the past 4 or 5 games, everything has been slowed and seemed to allow defenses on short yards to get set to shoot gaps for the runs especially, and also appears to provide time for the defensive coordinators to understand what we're going to try to do on offense and change the defense accordingly. Would be interesting to know what folks of a much higher football IQ than mine think. Just seems that any time they get to the line, then reset and look at the sidelines for a new play, the momentum gets lost. Yeah, I think this team plays better in rhythm. I like it when they do a little bit of tempo. I think there's some obvious tempo ones where like they run to the line to like do a QB sneak and that just never works for whatever reason. Like the obvious ones just don't work, but I like when they're like, you kind of get the defense on the heels. And that, you know, I don't think they've done as much of that, but with Sam Darnold being the kind of gunslinger he is, I do feel like it works pretty well when he's just getting in the flow and doing and kind of just doing his thing. Now, you can get in trouble sometimes, and you might turn the ball over, but I do like that, and I would like to see that more. I don't think it's a, you know, try to run 120 plays a game sort of thing that Sark came out and wanted to do and pretty much did once and then never did again. But I think you got to pick your spots, and I think USC could probably pick a few more spots than they have been. Steve in Seattle. Guys, I have a light bulb. Stanford has this god-awful deal where they opened the season in Australia before heading home to play USC, and we dominated them. After I graduated from USC in 1993, that's when I did too, Steve, I too went to Oz for 3 months, not a weekend, and I swear it took me 30 days to recover from the jet lag, and I was 20 or 21. So, what if we meet a Stanford team not suffering from jet lag, albeit a short week after Notre Dame, but virtually a home game, and SC on a poorly scheduled no-practice bye week and away? I sure hope the Cougs beat UW. What do you think? Love the show. Fight on, Steve in Seattle. So, obviously, he sent this in before that last weekend. The Cougs didn't win, Steve, I think, as you know. And I think that's a really important part. So, if you look at Stanford's schedule, they did go play that game against Rice. They didn't look good against USC. USC looked as best as they did all year, and they didn't look good against San Diego State. And they kind of got things going. Now, I think some of their problems early, too, were self-inflicted, where they were starting Keller Christ instead of KJ Costello. They didn't put in, I think it was against Oregon State, where they won 15-14. And they didn't put, I think that was the game, they didn't put KJ Costello in like the entire time. And it looked like, you know, the offense was struggling. It was like this David Shaw stubborn-ass moment where he was just like asked about it and they still weren't going to put him in. It was like, I'm going to prove to you my initial decision was right. And it wasn't, you know, it's like Christ wasn't the right guy. Costello was. So I think now they're starting to play a little bit better. You know, they did lose still a couple games down the, you know, they lost the game down the stretch. What was it? So they played, I'm sorry, I'll pull up their schedule right now. So they had early on after the bye week, they lost to USC, lost San Diego State. They beat UCLA pretty good. They beat Arizona State pretty good. They squeaked by at Utah. They crushed Oregon. Now, this was Oregon without Herbert on week 7, but they crushed them 49-7. They played a Thursday night game against Oregon State where they won 15-14. They lost to Washington State the next week, but I think that's when they started to get Chris going. They played Washington on a Friday night at home. Great win there. They squeaked by Cal 17-14, and then a good win over Notre Dame. So it's not like they're playing like at the super high level, but they're playing a lot better, and I think that jet lag might have had something to do with it. Just another scheduling Pac-12 thing, scheduling, you know, their top teams in ways that they shouldn't be scheduled. Like, could you imagine Alabama, like Nick Saban, like, hey, we're gonna send you to Australia? He's like, hell no. He doesn't even go on the road to play out of conference games. He'll only play them on neutral fields. So yes, I think some of the powers in the Pac-12 need to push back a little bit, and I think everyone did. There's so much emphasis on the road game followed by a Friday road game that didn't happen this year, where Larry Scott was like, and he made some stupid statement like, yeah, they came out and said, athletic directors came out and said, hey, we don't want that anymore. Like, you as a conference shouldn't want that. Why would you put your teams in these horrible situations? It really seemed like a computer just generated the schedule and they just spit it out and that was it. So I think it's dumb on the conferences. Like, don't do that kind of stuff. That's a contender. You sent to Australia. You sent Rice to Australia. You don't send Stanford to Australia. All right. Anyway, Steve in Seattle. I'm sorry. That was Steve in Seattle. My bad. So thank you, Steve, for that one. Glad you love the show. Trojan Q in Huntington Beach. He said the good. Very insightful observations from the entire podcast staff. You guys fill my Trojan cravings. Thanks for that. Bad. Stop downplaying the bad coaching with doublespeak. Like, fans should be happy with the Pac-12. Fans should be happy winning the Pac-12, or 10-2 season is great. SC winning the Pac-12 is like our one-eyed man anointing. I'm sorry. This is weird. He said SC winning the Pac-12 is like the one-eyed man anointed king among the land of the blind. I think that's what he meant. Bad coaching is bad coaching, regardless of the record, unless you went to revisit Lane Kiffin, who finished 10-2, ranked number six in year two. But 10-2 brought him another 3 years. Frankly, with consistent talent and bad coaching, this team could easily go 10-2 every year without ever qualifying for the championship football playoff. Then what? Would you still be satisfied? Because I can already see where this is headed. Trojan Q in Huntington Beach. Hey, Trojan Q. Okay, so I get kind of criticized. Now, I'm not complaining about getting criticized. I put myself out there. I put opinions out there. You're going to be criticized. But it's funny that I'll get criticized for being too negative. Like, why do you always say that the coaching's bad and they need to do this better and blah, blah, blah. So they're like, you're too negative. They're 10-2. Everything's good. And I also get criticized on the other side saying, like, you know, if I say going 11-2 and winning the Pac-12, no matter how they looked all year, is a good thing. Because I think it is, you know. I do think there's been some poor coaching. I do think there's been some really bad decisions and stuff needs to get cleaned up. But I'm also going to say, like, if they go 11-2 and they win the Pac-12 and yeah, heck, win the Fiesta, you know, was it the ideal season? No, but it's still pretty darn good. So, Trojan Q, I'm just trying to tell you like I see it. I'm not trying to appease one side or the other, but I'm going to get criticized by both for being too soft or, you know, wearing rose-colored glasses and being too nice or being too pessimistic. So probably that's good that I'm kind of in the middle there. But what I'm going to be is honest, and I'm going to tell you what I think. I think we would talk about the Chip Kelly crap, because I'm going to call it crap because I don't want to talk about it too much, but I'm more of a fan of Chip Kelly. I think he's going to be successful in college. Like, I thought he would be successful if he came back to USC, and I had USC fans. Some of them think, oh, that'd be great. And other ones are like, no, we hate him. We don't want him. But I was consistent. I thought he'd be good for USC. That's why I think he's going to be good for UCLA. Dan Weber doesn't really agree with me on that. I don't think Coach Harvey Hyde, you listen to what that – neither of those guys really agree with me on that. So we're going to tell you what we think, and that's all I can do. Let's see. Another – this is Tyler. First, thanks for the great work you've all done this season. I read and listen to everything. A+. Some general end-of-the-season 30,000-foot observations. One, 4- and 5-star kids consistently under or erratically perform, thinking of DBs especially here. That's on the coaches. Two, if players exhibit a look-at-me-slash-showboating undisciplined behavior and remain on the field, that's on the coaches. Three, if our third-quarter performance is consistently subpar, that's on the coaches. Four, if the only thing that will make us happy is playing for the national championship year every year, that's on us. Though I think being in the quote-unquote final four every 2 to 3 years is a very reasonable expectation for USC. Tyler and Sammamish. Tyler, way too logical. So what are you doing? No, I think they're all great points. I agree with point 1, 2, and 3 being on the coaches. And I believe that, you know, if USC fans can't be happy if they didn't get the head coach they wanted a couple years ago, and no matter what the team does, you're not going to be happy with it, then I think that's on the fans. So I think those are all great points. All right, we got one more from Steve. Let's see. He says, guys, is the new Coliseum going to have a peristyle? And if not, what will you change your name to? Beat the trees. Hope to see you at the Fiesta Bowl, Steve, up in Seattle. Yes, Steve, the new Coliseum will still have the peristyle. The peristyle is not going away. They're not allowed to change anything on the outdoor parts of the stadium, which is part of the reason, or I guess the major reason why they're putting all those suites in the middle of the stadium, because it would have been difficult to do it. I still think there's ways you could do it where you're not screwing with the outside of the stadium, or you could push back on that a little bit more. I mean, it just depends on what you think. I've talked to a lot of people that I know and love that work there, and they're swearing up and down this was like the only option. I disagree with that. I mean, I've never seen this done before, ever. I'm one that's like, hey, there's proven ways to do things that can work. Do one of those, not let's do something that no one's ever done before and a lot of people hate, but we're just going to shove it down their throats and do it anyway. I just didn't think it had to go like this. But the peristyle will stay the same. Unfortunately, those like temporary bleachers are going to stay out there, the sun deck or whatever they used to call it. All that stuff is staying the same. So next year is going to be, if you haven't heard it, an absolute disaster. There's the museum construction going on. There's still the soccer stadium being built, or if it's built, then they'll have soccer stuff going on there. Losing a lot of parking, I think over 1,000 parking spaces, losing 9,000 seats to a construction zone. So all those people that would be sitting where the, you know, in that building have to be displaced. So everyone's going to get displaced next year, and then you're going to get displaced again the year after that. I think a lot of people don't know where they're going to end up, and once they figure it out, it's going to cause even more outrage. It's going to be bad. Like, it's not going to be, and it's a horrible home football schedule. There's a Friday night game. Like, all this stuff, I think, is just terrible. So it's going to be rough sledding next year as far as fan experience goes. And I've had so many people have really bad fan experiences already. What should USC do? I mean, bring back those radios again. Like, whatever you need to do, bring those back, because people like to listen to the game live. Try to, you know, add Wi-Fi, whatever you need to do. Make it a better fan experience, because it's not going to be a fun one next year. You got to fix people getting into the Coliseum. It takes forever. You can't tell people, hey, make sure you try to go in an hour early, because that's what's required. No, like, that shouldn't be required. But okay. Whew. Well, that was a pretty good rant. I got through all of your questions. So that little splinter in my brain that knows there's like questions there that are unanswered, I got through all the other questions. So we categorized them. Harvey, Dan, other, recruiting. So I actually got through the recruiting ones too. So if you want more recruiting questions for next week, you can send those in. More for me for a solo podcast, or for Dan or for Harvey, send those in, podcast@uscfootball.com, or call or text 424-254-9141. We've been getting a lot of texts, a lot of emails, tons of emails, lots of voicemails. So we do love it. We appreciate that. So I'm glad I got to knock those out. I feel better. You know, I can sleep soundly. You know what? I got all those questions and there were some really good questions too, and really good observations. And we do appreciate you sending all of those in. Okay. Well, I'm going to wrap it up. Go get some lunch. Head to USC football practice. Don't forget, today the college football rankings come out for the playoff. Obviously, it doesn't really matter unless something weird happened and USC like jumped up a bunch of spots, which I don't really see happening. And they get some chance to make the playoff. But the way it stands now, with Alabama losing, they're a one-loss team that's not going to win their conference. It's just sitting there. They might get in over like an Ohio State that wins their conference after beating like an undefeated Wisconsin. USC just doesn't have quality wins on the schedule. You know, basically your best win will be Stanford twice if you win the Pac-12. So it's just not going to be the great resume to make the playoff. And, you know, we talked about this before, but I think this year, it's probably better to just win the Pac-12. The most important thing to me, win the Pac-12. And everything else, like, go to the Fiesta Bowl and try to beat a good team. Maybe at Ohio State or someone good. It could be a really big-name team. Go in there and beat them. Okay, well, thank you so much for tuning in to the Peristyle Podcast. Again, remember, Wednesday noon, we will have our Facebook Live show. We will also record a Family Feud podcast with Keely and Shotgun. So you can send your questions in for them as well, and we'll make sure they get it. If you want to even leave a voicemail for them, I'll play that for them, and they can do it on their show. So thank you so much for tuning in to the Peristyle Podcast. Glad you tuned in, and we will talk to you next time.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. Don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your smartphone or tablet for free. Just click the iTunes link on peristylepodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.